diverse, independent, yours. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, BC.
This is Solidarity News on Radio Labor.
This is a Radio Labor report recorded on Friday, October 13th, 2023. I'm Mark Belanger. There is a crisis in nursing all around the world, with understaffing, a lack of respect for family life issues, and increasingly problems caused by the climate crisis. Recently, Global Nurses United held a conference in San Francisco to discuss what can be done. One of the nurses who attended the conference was Linda Silas. Ms. Silas is the president of the Canadian Federation of Nurses Unions. The CFNU has about 250,000 nurses in Canada. I asked her what Global Nurses United was and what it does.
About 10 years ago, we started the GNU, Global Nurses United, to bring working nurses together toward promoting public health or Medicare for all, to promote nurse-patient ratios, so safe staffing, and work together on the climate crisis. So right now, we represent nurses in 35 countries, which is just over 3 million.
You have said that there is a global crisis in nursing. What does this crisis consist of?
We knew way before the pandemic that we were going to hit a nursing shortage. And then the pandemic hit, and I always call the pandemic, it was like a COVID-99. The patient's heart stopped, all the attention needs to be put towards that. And we did. And now the situation is worse than during the pandemic, because we're in a shortage, but we're also in a shortage of two prongs. We're in a shortage, we don't have enough educated and trained nurses across the country and across the globe, but we also have a shortage of nurses willing to work full-time, even part-time hours because of the working condition.
So what are some of the solutions?
Solutions are simple when you think about it. We need to make the jobs in healthcare, and that's for nurses, but also for every other healthcare worker, the best jobs that are in our community. When I graduated from nursing, to get a job in my local hospital was a success. Now we don't see it. So we have to work with employers to make sure that it's not only about safe staffing, so nurse-patient ratios, proper training for our nurses, enough personnel support and the other allied healthcare workers, because we all work as a team, but also respecting nurses and others as individuals. That's the second issue nurses tell us that they don't want permanent jobs, is one, is the understaffing, and two, is that there's no respect that I have a life outside the hospital or the long-term care. We need to guarantee that the past or 8-hour or 12-hour shift, that they'll be able to go home, that they'll be able to get a day off for a vacation or a family event or to pursue their education. All of that issues that would bring employers to be the best in their community.
There were nurses from all around the world at the conference, Global Nurses United. What issues did they have in common?
The understaffing is probably the number one. The shortage of nurses is global. And some countries feel more of a despair, while others, like Canada, are working with every level of government to fix it. But the issue that we were all trying to manage well is the migration of nurses. As you know, many internationally educated nurses come to Canada. We welcome them, but it's important to welcome them both professionally and culturally. And those were issues we were discussing, on how to welcome them culturally. But also, our recruitment needs to be based ethically. So you can't go and recruit nurses in a country that will be deprived of nursing services. And there are certain target countries that even the Philippines, which we thought had a surplus of nurses, are now showing a shortage of nurses. For our country, our message to all the province, territory, and the federal government You need a recruitment strategy that includes internationally educated nurses. But we're rich enough to educate our own in all our communities and see into the profession. And how do we support students and how do we support new grads? Those are all on the table.
You mentioned internationally trained nurses like from the Philippines. What should be Canada's policy about internationally trained nurses?
The first policy is ethical recruitment. And we passed a statement at GNU on how nurses unions across the world are going to support ethical recruitment. So it's a give and take. If I go and recruit nurses in your country, I have to make sure the numbers are safe for you and for us, but also that I give back to your country. And that we're not seeing a lot of. We're seeing, for example, Canada going to the Philippines, India, and other countries, a lot of the countries in Africa too, where we go and recruit their nurses, but leave them with nothing.
I am surprised to have heard you say that there is a shortage of nurses in the Philippines. For years, the Philippines has been a source of nurses. Do you know what happened?
I think they underproduced and over-migrated. They're doing studies now because, like you, we always thought the Philippines was the area where it was educating nurses to migrate, to go in other countries, get good jobs, and help the families and their communities. And they're still doing that, but they're at the point where the shortage of nurses is showing an impact on how they can care for their own citizens. And it's a big global discussion now.
In Canada, as you say, there seems to be a shortage of doctors and many people do not have a doctor. Is there a greater role that could be played by nurse practitioners?
Yes, nurse practitioners are, as you know, independent health professionals. And I can specialize in emergency care and other long-term care or seniors care, but also in primary care. That's probably the number one area where they specialize. And we need to do, like the province of Quebec, for example, really increase the education level and support for nurses who wanted to go as nurse practitioner. And the main reason they did it was to help primary care, to help physician working in primary care. And nurse practitioners have shown to be the best allies and team players with our family doc. All of this is about working in a team. In Ottawa, and I've been in Ottawa for 20 years now, I have a nurse practitioner, and when need be, she connects with her physician colleague consulting if there's something that is over her scope. And that is a practice in Ontario that we see a lot, but we don't see much in other provinces. So we have a lot of work to do.
Hello, this is Boris Chassaigne. To get a feel on what's happening across the country, listen to Viewpoints. For reports, interviews, and documentaries on politics, arts and culture, the environment, housing, and more. Thanks to 30 journalists stationed in the Canadian provinces and territories. Local news nationwide. Mondays at 4:30 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM and streaming online at cjsf.ca.
Through Tree Canada's National Greening Program, native tree seedlings are planted across Canada, creating a widespread impact. Planted trees provide habitat, prevent soil erosion, and reforest areas that have suffered tree loss due to pests and weather. Tree Canada performs 1, 2, and 5-year assessments to monitor tree survival and ensure the trees planted are on track to meet the forest cover goals of the site. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour report recorded on October 6, 2023. I'm Mark Boloche. October 7th is the World Day for Decent Work. It's a day set aside to remind people of the need for a living wage, safe workplaces, labor unions, and more. It calls for productive work in conditions of freedom, equity, security, and human dignity. All over the world, labor unions celebrate the day by holding rallies, organizing conferences, and starting new projects to help working people. Thousands of union activists representing millions of workers participate. Millions. For example, the global unions, which represent sectors such as public services and transport workers, together represent 170 million unionized workers. Radio Labour is commemorating the World Day for Decent Work by starting a project to teach English as an additional language lessons, known as ADL lessons. We're doing this because there are thousands of trade unionists who are struggling to learn English in order to better participate in the international labor movement. The movement tries its best to provide its members with content in languages other than English, but 75% of the world's population speaks 20 languages, and the movement can't support them all. Meanwhile, 70% of the world's websites are in English. It is only fair that trade unionists who are not mother tongue English be supported in their efforts to learn the language as they try to participate in their labor movement. The lessons will include an audio newscast, the English script translated into many languages, and an English lesson. At first, the scripts will be translated into French, Spanish, German, Tagalog, and Ukrainian. Those last two languages, Tagalog and Ukrainian, are included because most of the 2 million seafarers in the world are from Ukraine and the Philippines. There are many courses around the world for learning English, but few, if any, use a union perspective and vocabulary. The lessons could prove to be a way of teaching workers about the labor movement and organizing them into unions. The lessons will be supplied free of charge. The need for English lessons is not just for workers in the developing world. In countries such as Canada and the United States and others, migrant workers are struggling to make a living for themselves and their families while trying to learn English. It's not easy. But there are costs to producing a service like this. That is why we have started a petition calling for the creation of an English as an additional language lesson service. If we can show that many people support the project, we might be able to not only start the program, but find funders to keep it going. You can help by signing the petition. Even if you are lucky enough to be an English speaker and won't use the lessons, you can show your support for the project by signing the petition. Go to radiolabour.net and click on the menu tab, English Lessons. You will find a description of the service, a prototype lesson, and quotes from workers saying why they want the lessons. Remember, when it comes to supporting workers around the world, it is not solidarity forever. It's solidarity now. Visit the website, radiolabour.net, and show your solidarity.
For 40 years, the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, a.k.a. SFPIRG, has been helping students build communities at SFU. Campus organizations like Out on Campus and Embark developed out-of-action groups at SFPIRG. Action groups are one of the ways that student activists can take action for change. Visit us at www.sfpirg.ca. That's www.sfpirg.ca to learn more about starting your own action group today.
Hey, SFU! getting money back for all your empty or refundable bottles and cans just got a lot easier. Just sign up for Returned Express for free. You can bag your containers, tag the bag, and drop it through the window at the new Express and Go container in the East parking lot. Return It will count your containers and credit your refunds to your online account. Learn more at returnit.ca/SFU.
If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, October 13th, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, we're taking a trip down memory lane and re-releasing one of our favorite episodes from 2019. In honor of Islamic History Month in Canada, we're re-releasing an episode of the show in which former host Victoria Fenner sat down with Graham Truelove, author of Un-Canadian, Islamophobia in the True North. The two discussed Truelove's inspiration behind the book, Islamic History as a Part of Canada's History, and more. Here is that conversation. Take a listen.
We all carry around myths about who we are, what we do, and what we believe. We do it individually, and we also do it as a nation. Here in Canada, we like to believe that we're a welcoming people, kind and generous to anyone who shows up on our doorstep. Today's guest challenges that assumption. Graham Truelove's book, Un-Canadian, Islamophobia in the True North, looks specifically at our treatment and attitudes towards Muslims. The book looks further back and demonstrates that our treatment of Muslims isn't all that different than our treatment of other people of non-white heritage throughout our history. We had a conversation about what those myths are, and also a couple of excerpts from the book, with permission of the publisher, Knightwood Editions.
In 1854, Lord Stanley, the man who would one day spend 10 guineas on an ornate silver cup and donate it to the champion hockey team in the Dominion of Canada, was just 13 years old. The first organized game of hockey, which would be held in Montreal and feature a wooden puck, was still decades away. But in that year, a woman named Agnes Love gave birth to her son, James. As far as we know, he was the first documented Muslim born in Canada. This much is known of the family. They came from Scotland, were probably converts, and little James was named after his father. To understand Islam's place in Canada today, we need to understand just how deep its roots here are. In fact, they probably go back even further than the Love family. In the 1700s, the slave trade was active in what would become Canada, and some 30% of African slaves were likely Muslim. Later, Europeans comprised the bulk of voluntary early Muslim immigration to Canada. Some early accounts suggest a warm welcome, reporting stories of peddlers being allowed to stay in people's homes overnight during heavy snowfalls. Most of them became farmers and business people. They staked claims and sifted through endless sludge in the gold rush. They helped construct the CPR, the nation-building link binding East and West that has been called our national dream. It's been said that Canada is a nation built by immigrants. This notion fails to recognize the crucial role of Indigenous peoples, but it does honor the extraordinary toil and achievement of people from around the globe that Canada represents. If Canada was built by immigrants, Canada was built by Muslims, too.
And now here's Graham Truelove explaining where the inspiration for his book came from.
Actually, it was my wife's idea. I had been following the story of Omar Khadr for a number of years, and that was one that always sort of hit home because we're, you know, roughly the same age, and kind of following that story and seeing the sort of life milestones that, you know, that I was going through. Meanwhile, he's, you know, still in Guantanamo Bay. You know, it was something that really that really struck me, how this guy's life was being stolen. So that was a story that that really struck me, and I'd been following it for a long time. And my wife and I were discussing it, and she said, "You know, this is just you know, a piece of a much bigger story, a much bigger puzzle. So it was her idea to kind of write about this pattern of othering of Muslim Canadians that's taken place since 9/11.
So she was very much part of the writing of the book as well.
Well, I mean, I talked to her probably a lot about all the different bits and pieces, and yeah, she actually read an initial draft of it and gave me some really valuable feedback about what I needed to do to make the book better.
You refer to in the beginning of the book something which is very, very powerful. You refer to something called the gauntlet, and it was what's that a symbol for?
Well, it's